All right, so to repeat what I was saying, in the morning I ended by constructing the recursion relation in general, and now we're going to, to actually work out recursion relations, we should be in a specific theory, and I'm going to specialize to gluons in four dimensions. Okay. All right, so the two steps to actually set up a recursion relation is first you define the shift, which for the I started with shifting two momenta just by some other proportional to some vector q. So this will be equivalent to choosing the q from the morning. And then second is to check the boundary behavior. See if you have that vanishing condition in your shift parameter as z goes to infinity, we would like this limit to be zero. So if you define a shift and boundary behavior is good, then you're in business. So for gluons in four dimensions, we'll depend on the smart choice of the shift. So you specify exactly what shift you're doing, and then we'll see. Well, you'll see very clearly in a moment. All right, so for the on-shell conditions, remember we wanted q squared is 0, q dot p1 equals 0, q dot pn equals 0. So now, before the particles were labeled by j and k, now I'm calling them 1 and n. And so in particular, I use 1 and n because 1 and n are adjacent to each other in the cyclic ordering. That will turn out to be convenient. Not necessary, but convenient, and we'll see how later. So I mentioned that there are two solutions, complex valued, and so happens that with spinners we can write them down. They're constructed in terms of the spinners associated to 1 and n. So if you pick a lambda from one of the shifted gluons and lambda tilde from the other one, those conditions are satisfied. I don't need to worry about some constant factor in front because that'll be in the z. So I've defined the shift, and now I'm going to check the boundary behavior. So, okay, well, let me define the shift by choosing, actually, this solution. I have to be specific, not the other one. It will turn out to be, it's okay for three out of the four helicity conditions. So H1 and Hn are plus or minus 1. So they can have the same helicity, or if they have opposite helicity, then it has to be in a certain order associated to this particular shift. There's a missing helicity configuration here, and for that configuration, the boundary behavior will be bad. And if you try to write down the recursion relation and use it naively, you will get the wrong answers. Now, this one, for this helicity case, we can prove the vanishing at infinity at the level of Feynman diagrams. I will do that now. So let's take this helicity case. And so this shift in Q implies then a shift of the spinner components themselves. So since Q is proportional to lambda 1, then lambda 1 is not shifted. So the shift in P1 is absorbed in lambda tilde 1. And then it's the opposite for N. So lambda n is then shifted, and lambda tilde n is not. Now, the effect of the shift also has an effect on the polarization vectors. So I think for those of you who were concerned about this term where the two shifted propagators are joining in the same vertex, we have to remember that, and this is where the helicities come in, of course, through the polarization vectors in terms of diagrams. So epsilon 1 is for negative helicity, and that had this structure for some arbitrary gauge choice mu tilde. So because of the shift, we can see that the z dependence is coming in the denominator and not in the numerator. So this already falls off as 1 over z. And for epsilon plus, similarly, we have a conjugate kind of expression, and indeed it's exactly the other spinner that has the z dependence, which again is in the denominator. So that's why this is the easiest helicity case to prove. Now we'll just look at the diagrams and count the powers of z. So we can possibly have, again, we look at our sort of any given contributing diagram, and we pick out the path from 1 to n. Now, say we have in the, it's the only way that z is entering into the numerator is via the momentum vectors in the cubic vertex. So the worst case is when all of these vertices would be cubic vertices. So if we have our cubic vertices along the path, then we pick up ZR to the R dependence, but then we have R minus 1 propagators, and we know those are all going as 1 over Z. And then we have 2 epsilons, those. So you can see the boundary behavior is 1 over Z. Therefore, the vanishing condition is satisfied, and we can set up the recursion relations. Now, for these other ones, it happens to be true that the boundary behavior is OK. The limit is 0 as z goes to infinity. But it's not true at the level of diagrams. They have to be grouped differently. And there are a couple different ways to prove that, which I won't go through at the moment. For now, we'll just say this one is good enough. Indeed, it is good enough to generate any gluon amplitude you want, because we're going to start from the three-point amplitudes. We know what those are. And you always have a positive and a negative helicity somewhere in your amplitude. Otherwise, you know it's 0. So you can pick those to shift, and then you set up the recursion relation. So the explicit recursion relation formula for gluons, then, is the following. So this is for that shift of 1 and n. And also has to sum over internal helicities. These are just the left and right amplitudes with the appropriate shift. And I do notice the shift is slightly different in each term because it's the propagator that sets the value of z. The p1 hat is lambda 1 times lambda 1 hat, which you just plug in the value of z for each term. Then we also have capital P hat for the shifted propagator, which is going on shell. Well, this just inherits the same shift, of course. It's the same lambda 1, lambda n, lambda 1, lambda n tilde times this factor. But we know it's on shell, therefore it's also a null vector, therefore we can write it directly in terms of spinners. So we can rewrite the shifted vector in terms of spinners like this. So this will be convenient for using in the formulas. And just to review the definition, so P1, comma I, capital one, capital P is the sum of P1 through PI, and then yeah, this kind of longer spinner product. Yeah, if you break it apart so you have the null vectors in the middle. It's just the product of those spinner products. Any questions? Ian? Everything okay? Ah, yeah. So I haven't used that before, but this is just a contraction of spinner indices. All right, so P dot lambda would be P, this sort of thing. So then it has one spinner index left over. Yeah, so this one has the spinner index of the positive chirality type, and this one has the one of the negative chirality type. And this is just the factor in the denominator. Good. Anything else? This? Yeah, so this is right, this is left over in a way from the previous lecture where I had the yeah, let me just draw at least the picture again, right? So we're looking for all the propagators where you have one on one side and n on the other side. And then you have some, this is now P1, comma I in the middle. This is I. So yeah, so then we're doing the shift, we're picking up the pole coming from this propagator in Z. So that happens to be sort of at, you know, this value of Z. And with that shift, then the P hat goes on shell. And so with P hat sitting sort of at the edge, these are on shell amplitudes here and here, which have been written there. And of course, you still have to do the shift on 1 and n. The shift is different for every term because we're summing over I, and the shifts depend on I. And then we have the usual propagator in the middle. No, this is. So in the same way that this P1 hat is P1 as you see it here plus this other term, this capital P hat is P unhatted plus the same term. And then I just rewrote that this way. So yeah, Z for a given I is really this. Yes. Right, so that's the solution for P1i hat squared equals 0. More questions? Thank you.
are not obviously there, but they are there.
Right.
It's remarkable that without having to keep track of every single one of them, a subset of the devices can control all of them.
Exactly.
And that's really what's being captured in this remarkable invention that we have to do with the So that's that which makes it possible for only a small subset of the devices to control all of them.
Yeah, they're hiding inside the shift. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the SVU story from the string theory on drugs.
Yes, thanks. All right, so now I will do an example. I'll calculate another amplitude. Actually, I'll calculate the same amplitude I was calculating before, but better. So I'll look at the same gluon amplitude, 1 minus 2 minus 3 plus 4 plus. And okay, just so I can use my formulas mindlessly, let me just shift 1 and 4. 1 and n, and if they even have the helicity so that they can use the helicity choice is one of the correct ones. So now I'm looking for diagrams, and I also want to emphasize that we draw pictures to help, but unlike Feynman diagrams, this is not a diagrammatic technique. That's why I've also written the formula algebraically. It's something nice to look at, but we're not doing diagram combinatorics. So I want to have, in that picture, I want to have 1 and 4 on opposite sides, but I only have two other legs anyway. So far I have one topology. Put the hats here, just remember we're shifting those. Now I also have to sum over internal helicities. So in principle, I have plus minus here and minus plus because, okay, at each of the two amplitudes, the left and the right, I'm going to want to keep my conventions of having all momenta directed outward. So the helicity changes as it goes from one end to the other then. But we know about three-point amplitudes. We know where we're starting from, and we know they're zero if they have all the same helicity. So there's only one possibility here. So I can write down that formula, what it would be in terms of the Park-Taylor, well, not even Park-Taylor, what we would have computed just from the vertices. But now I just remember to put hats on 1 and 4 and on the propagator. So I have an MHV on the left and conjugate MHV on the right. And now I just have to plug in the values from those shifts. So first of all, for 1 and 4, the ones that show up in this expression are lambda 1 and lambda tilde of 4, but those are exactly the ones that are not shifted. So I can start by just erasing the hats on 1 and 4. Now I still have the p hat, but I have helped myself a bit by writing it there in terms of spinners. So p, yeah, I'm just using capital P to mean p1 plus p2. I'll take it in that direction. So in a way, okay, the This is p hat written in terms of spinners. Remember, we don't have a completely well-defined way to say which one is lambda and which one is lambda tilde because of the factor that you can pass back and forth between them. So I'll just take lambda of p hat to have this factor in the denominator and lambda tilde for p hat not to. Then this whole expression becomes, if you're keeping track of signs, there should be that in the front. So I have 1, 2 cubed. And all right, from 2 p hat here, I now take this lambda p hat and plug in this expression. So then I get this in the denominator, which is, since it was in the denominator, is now coming in the numerator. I have 1 p4, and in the denominator 2 p4, and the same thing for this one. I took care of all my signs at once, I believe, so this is the same, and again I pick up another one of these factors. Then we have what's left of the propagator. I still have 3, 4 cubed in the numerator. And now with these p hats, yeah, now I don't have that factor in the denominator because it was already in the lambda. So now I just replace p hat with p dot lambda, which is lambda 1, actually. Right? So this is lambda 4, lambda 1, or say n. So that's the answer. We can certainly clean it up very easily. First of all, wherever we have 1 plus 2 inside these brackets, there is a 1 or a 2 on the outside that kills one of those two terms. So this becomes 1 here and 2 here and 2 here. So then I think this cancels this factor. And what else? We write this without the prefactor. We can break up these products into the elementary spinner products. And do a whole lot of canceling. So there's 1, 2, 2, 1, 2, 1 cancels this, and then this also up to a sign, and then there's this one. And that's it. And actually, if you keep track of factors, we're already left with the proper answer. No gauge choice required. Any questions? I will do another one. Okay, so very similarly, still just driving MHV amplitudes. Now the 5.1. So suppose I wanted to do the same procedure. Now I have to organize my terms, I have 1 on one side of the diagram and 5 on the other. These are hatted. So now there are only two ways to distribute the rest of the legs among these vertices. I can have this one or this one. And then again, I have to assign the internal helicities. Now here I'm already done, because here I have three positive helicities on a four-point amplitude. So that's going to be zero either way. And here I also only have one option, because here I already see I have two positive helicities at this vertex. So I have to assign the internal helicities that way. So I have one contribution, and I write down then the product of the two amplitudes. In fact, the operations are really the same. I mean, for the same reason that I started by erasing the hats on 1 and 4, it's the same here, because in this expression only lambda 1 and lambda tilde 5 show up. So those are the same as their unshifted values. And then again, I just plug in the values for the spinner components of p hat. And, okay, so directly then, in a couple steps, I'll get to 3P5. Because it's lambda tilde, which is not the one picking up the shift. It's lambda of 5. Right, see, so this is the new lambda, and then this is the new lambda tilde, which is the old one. Yes. Right. Okay, so here, capital P equals P4 plus P5, 5P1, or 1P5 squared. And you can finish this just as simply, because again, wherever we see capital P in one of these longer spinner brackets, it's P4 plus P5, but in each of these cases, there is either a 4 or a 5 sitting on the outside, so one of the terms drops out, and what's left can be decomposed into the elementary spinner brackets, and what would be left over is the Park-Taylor expression. So one can prove then the Park-Taylor formula by induction on N. This is, of course, not the way the Park-Taylor formula was proved, because it was proved much earlier, but the original proof required having an ansatz in a way for guessing or knowing the answer in advance, and here one just derives it directly. So in the MHV case, there's no sum of terms or cancellations. I mean, okay, we have to simplify this a little bit, but it's one term, which is the one term of the Park-Taylor formula. And so this is a general feature for gluon amplitudes, that we get the amplitudes or in their most compact forms quite directly. So questions on it is explicit calculations. Okay. Oh, I was just going to show one more. Oh, does that work? Oh, yeah. It's a little stickier. Let's just look at a six-point example, a non-MHP, in fact, an alternating helicity, which is sort of the most complicated we can get. I just want to sort of show how we count the terms. So here we're looking for diagrams where you have one on one side and six on the other. So there are three ways. Now we can add the rest of the legs. Three, two, now we find for this diagram, we see right away there's only one way to assign the internal helicities. Now for such a diagram, looking at it, we would start by writing down both helicity configurations, and it's not obvious just by looking at those that something vanishes, but it does. And the reason is the shift. So it turns out, in a nutshell, let's say, yeah, there's only one say, non-vanishing, say, helicity choice for shifted amplitudes, shifted three-point amplitudes. And the rule is going to be that the double helicity has to be the same as the shifted one. And the reason, if you think about it, is that, remember, the three-point amplitudes requires either to have all the lambdas proportional or all the lambda tildes proportional. But now we're looking for a given amplitude, like a six-point amplitude, in which the external momenta are in principle fixed. I mean, we know which one we want to compute. Therefore, the spinners of 1 and 2 are certainly not proportional. So from the start, both of these should be 0, except that with the shift, we can sort of reach the point where... both the amplitudes would be... Okay, yes, so okay, we're at the wrong point in phase space, right? We're not at the point where you'd pick up a non-zero contribution because, because we were starting with some spinners. So, okay, all I mean, right, there's that the, yeah, they're not proportional. But when the shift is allowed, then the one that's being shifted can become proportional, and that's only one of the two. So in these cases, wherever you have a three-point amplitude that's being shifted, then you also only have immediately one helicity assignment. Now, if you're not keeping track of that in advance, you could blindly just go and plug in things in the formulas, and it would tell you that the three-point amplitude was zero. So you don't need to worry about that in advance, but this is just a way to see that a lot of the terms drop out from the start. So here, three terms are left, and indeed, the final answer does have three terms, which, let me write it down just so you can see what a more complicated amplitude looks like. Because it's good to see something that's not the Park-Taylor formula. And these are the kinds of objects that turn out to have interesting structure in other ways. Let me put the third term up here. Oh, no, wait, that was right. This is... So that's one of the... Sorry, what? You don't understand? Why not 5-6? Well, a 5-6 singularity is like here, right? They're all there somewhere. You have the two particle poles and the three particle poles. Right. And here is the square bracket, for example. Oh, no, I'm not going to repeat it from the start. This is the answer. But this is, yeah, I think this is diagram by diagram. They should correspond. I'm not totally sure. But I've already done the shift and simplified a little bit. So, yeah, these objects like these are the physical poles, and then these are the so-called spurious poles. Right, so this is a case where I guess you can see this cyclic symmetry, which is not the case as we know at the 8-point amplitude. But at 6 points it does work out. Yeah. Okay, but in this case it reflects the cyclic symmetry by accident, I guess. No, I don't really have anything more to say about them now, but... Okay.
So these factors, like, in the last term, the denominator 1, 2 plus 3, 8. So that's a factor that goes to 0 when the vector 2 plus 3 becomes...
Yeah.
And physically, there should be no singularity in either of the factors.
Right.
So you get a simplification, but it's at the expense of some spurious poles.
Exactly.
Now, physically, the spurious poles must cancel.
Yes.
And it looks like a miracle.
It does. Well, okay, at least you see that each one shows up more than once, so that's a good start.
Precisely twice.
Precisely twice. Yeah, that's right.
I
Yeah.
That's a factorization that does have 6 and 1 on the same side.
Right.
It's not obvious to share in the diagram.
Exactly. Yeah. So this one came from this diagram. Yeah, so no, it doesn't reflect that factorization in any sort of meaningful sense, I guess. Although, wait, actually this one is just coming from here, though, isn't it? Yeah, this is, right, this is already here. Which other ones? 2, 3, 5, 6. Yes, 6, 1, 2 is 3, 4, 5. And this one, yeah, this one is 1, 2, 3, and of course here it's shifted, so it was a little bit, then yeah, we put in the same propagator anyway, so that's where it came from. Okay, so this is not the best example to see how these things happen, but they do. All right, just an example of a non-adjacent shift. So nothing really dependent, nothing at all dependent on having adjacent gluons. We just get less compact expression. So if we're looking at the same amplitude that I was computing before, and suppose we decide to shift 1 and 3 instead of 1 and 4, well, then we have two contributions. Now we're looking for diagrams where we have 1 and 3 on opposite sides, and there are two of them. So again, here we know how to assign the internal helicities. It's obvious, and here you think through the shift again, and then you come up with that assignment. And so for each of these terms, you get some result. Again, I'm not going through the whole sequence here. So the point is that this works. You're not getting the most compact expressions because we know that there is a one-term expression, which is the Park-Taylor formula. And now we've got a two-term expression, which happens to agree with the Park-Taylor formula for sure, but it's just less compact. Now, the non-adjacent shifts can be useful in other ways besides getting compact formulas, because we can also use the BCFW recursion for things other than getting compact formulas. But all right. Okay, so I'll cover two topics in quick succession then. They don't have to be adjacent. So I chose adjacent ones because they're just fewer terms. In the earlier examples. Well, if I'm looking for a compact expression, then I would certainly choose. I mean, yeah, there's no particular reason I would really want to write that down besides just to show you that it's possible. Yeah.
And
I think, okay, so for a gluon amplitude like that one, if you, okay, well, that one is maybe too symmetric, but it is an endpoint gluon amplitude, and you shift any two adjacent ones, it's going to be the same size. So, I mean, you'll have the same, yeah, number of terms. And the intermediate steps? But that's just a... No, in my experience, it's all equivalent. You can come down with different expressions that, of course, are not immediately clear that they're equal, except that you know that they represent the same amplitude, but they're the same... Right. Yes. But they're also the same size as each other, these two formulas, so... Oh, that's a different question. Yeah, that's hard, actually. So that's hard to, if you have two representations of the same amplitude and you don't know that they represent an amplitude and you want to show that they're equal, you might not be able to. Okay, also on the question of adjacent versus non-adjacent, I mean, recall we can also do this in a theory where there is no color ordering. So then, yeah, then there's no notion of adjacent. So then you're stuck with a longer expression. Except, yeah, okay, so I want to close by mentioning two extensions of the recursion relation as we've seen it. Okay, so So the first is the existence of bonus relations. So, okay, if there is stronger falloff at infinity, say, for example, a of z is 1 over z squared, then you can set up the same construction, but stronger. So from the residue theorem, remember we used to have, the residue theorem for a z over z. But now, if we have stronger behavior, then we can put in an extra linear factor in the numerator, and this will be true. Then you'll derive a recursion relation of a similar form. Poles C, this column's still pi, AL, but now just with this extra term sitting here. And you can choose alpha to be whatever you want. You can choose alpha to be equal to some, to be equal to, one of the poles locations. So that means that you've essentially killed one term that you otherwise would have had in your recursion relation. You get a shorter one. And if you have even stronger falloff, then you can put in even more powers. And so this is an idea that's been used to great effect in gravity theories, in QED nicely, and also to do some other things in Yang-Mills theory. So for example, to the non-adjacent shifts actually have better boundary behavior, and their bonus relations can be used to prove some identities such as the BCJ identity. Relating the different permutations of gluons. Yes?
But usually in dispersion relation, if entropy doesn't fall fast enough, you just do subtraction. Can you do something similar?
Oh, just subtract of, yeah, if you know what you want to subtract. But finding out what you want to subtract is the hard part. I mean, that term. But yeah, in principle, yes. Okay, then I'd like to close with, say, 10 minutes talking about a multi-line shift. So far we've been shifting two momenta. You can shift more if you can get away with it, if you can understand the boundary behavior. And so the first example of this is in an NMHV amplitude. So we have three negative helicities. And we do the following shift. I'll write it directly in terms of the spinners. You shift all their lambda tildes. So eta tilde is just some other spinner. is a shift introduced by Caspar Riesager. And the momentum conservation follows from the Schouten identity. I can check, right, if you multiply these by the appropriate lambdas, then this sum of the three of them would be zero in the Schouten identity. Now you check the vanishing condition at infinity, and this is also okay at the diagram level. We just go through really the same power counting as we did in the other example. And so what's the recursion relation? Now our picture is a little bit more complicated. The poles can come from any propagator which have some of I, J, and K on one side and some of them on the other side. So they're not all on the same side, otherwise there's no momentum there's no Z dependence in the propagator. So we're looking at contributions, let's say it's I over here and J and K over here, and there are other legs, and there's the propagator in question. Okay. Plus, of course, you have the ones where it's J or K that's singled out. Now, to get something non-zero over here, presumably we want another negative helicity here. Otherwise, we don't have enough, because this is next to MHV amplitude. There is a special case, of course, in the case of the three-point vertex, but the three-point vertex is exactly the same one that's ruled out by the choice of shift. The fact that we're shifting lambda tilde and not lambda, for the reason I mentioned before. So, okay, we really only do have configurations where we have exactly MHV amplitudes on both the left and the right. Now, so then we would write down the Park-Taylor formula, and we will have some, so the Park-Taylor formula now only involves lambdas. So if we have the shifted I, J, and K which appear in the formula, then again, we'll erase the hats from the start. So the hats only show up in spinner products like this. And so now we want an analog of the expression. How do we interpret this as a spinner, given that PR is defined in terms of the shift here? Well, by definition, we can, since it has spinner components, we just multiply and divide by this contraction. And now the fact that this p hat is contracted with eta tilde, which is built into the shift, again, allows us to erase the hat. So in the Park-Taylor formula, wherever you have one of these p hats showing up, you replace that spinner product with whatever the other spinner is by this longer one. And then you have this factor in the denominator. But because of the little group scaling on the left and the right, this is going to show up exactly the same number of times in the numerator and denominator, and all these factors will cancel out. So it's good we don't have to worry about what that would have been. So we can directly just replace all of these by a spinner product without hats. And what have we derived? Well, this is then the prescription for MHV diagrams, also known as CSW rules. So this is for the NMHV case, but it generalizes for any helicity configuration. You'll shift all the lambda tildes for all the negative helicity gluons in such a way that the sum of all these, that momentum is conserved, You just have to choose the appropriate relative factors here. And if you have more than three gluons that are being shifted, then it just gets even easier because you have more dependence among them. It's the fact that with three, sort of these factors were fixed by this fountain identity. So the MHV diagram, CSW rules, to summarize, you choose eta tilde. And again, you know, these are not derived this way, but these are derived from other considerations. And then you draw graphs with MHV amplitudes as vertices. Then we use, for each of the vertices, you just use the Park-Taylor formula. And sort of this definition of the spinner. And this is another way to derive gluon amplitudes. And so this, I mean, we're shifting more than two gluons. Again, you're not getting the most compact forms, but you're getting an expression that is interesting in its own right for other reasons. And this was derived differently, but one can also derive it from a shift in this way. So that was just a taste of how BCFW recursion relations work and some of the things they can be used for. And I'll certainly be happy to take more questions.